Hey everyone, we're pumped to be able to share an exclusive trailer with you after the show. From Blue Wire Studios comes Golden Goal, Stories of Soccer Legends. Narrated by fellow Blue Wire host Brandon Kelly, each Monday, two new episodes will take a look into some of soccer's biggest stars and the moments that define their careers. From Haaland, Zlatan, Messi, Rapinoe, and many more, each episode will focus in on the historical plays and personalities that make the sport great. So stay tuned after the episode and listen to Golden Goal, Stories of Soccer Legends, wherever you get your podcasts. Welcome to episode 204 of the Barcelona Podcast, home to the most influential voices in the FC Barcelona community. Brought to you by the Blue Wire Podcast Network and sponsored betonline.ag. Hit that subscription button to be first to listen to the hottest takes on the biggest stories coming out of the Camp Nou. I'm Nick Hilton, and I'm again joined by Francesc Tomàs, Barca columnist featured on ESPN, Barca Blog, and many others. Francesc, we may get negative again today, but can I get a little Espanyol relegation positivity?
Hola, culés. Yeah, I think it's very sad to start a Barca podcast talking about Espanyol. I think that I want to start by saying that La Liga challenge is still alive mathematically, which is good. I'm not sure whether Madrid is going to drop 5 points in the last four matches, but, you know, that's beyond our control. Yep, Espanyol got relegated after 27 years. I remember the last time they got relegated, and I'm very happy to have seen that again. They won't be missed, and Real Madrid is probably going to have six less points when they start the next La Liga season. So all in all, three positive notes there.
Espanyol, they had a pretty good run there. 2006 Copa del Rey. I think they made a Europa League final back in 2007. So they had some good moments there, but alas, it just wasn't enough, and you could feel it all year long, especially the beginning of their season was really gross, and they were never able to come back out, even though they made some good signings. But nevertheless, they're in the hole, but they did give a good fight to Barcelona yesterday, 1-0, and that is what Francesc and I are going to start this to talk about. We have La Ronda to guide our conversation to discuss El Derbi Barcelona. So we're going to go over that, starting with a question from Pancho, because I think the three big talking points here are the two red cards and then the goal by Luis Suarez, the formation, Griezmann, how that all fit together. So those are the things that we're going to be talking about on today's show. So starting with a question from Pancho, with Fati suspended next game, what do you think about giving some minutes to Callado? Also looks like the Catalan Derby moves to the Segunda Division with Espanyol and Girona next season. And I think, Francesc, just to start the show off, from your perspective, I thought, and I was pretty clear, that Ansu Fati and Pol Lozano a few minutes later, it could have been yellows, but I also understand why VAR had them as red cards, because both players left their feet. Both players actually got some of the ball, which is what part of the rule is. But then the rest of the rule is that they also got too much of the man with the open studs on the cleats. So that's why the red card happens. And I think even the Lozano red card, if Fati gets a yellow there, Lozano's is obviously a yellow. But I think Pol Lozano's foul on PK alone would have been a pretty light red. But because Fati had a red, it made a lot of sense that Lozano was a red. So I don't really like how that's conditional in that way.
It shouldn't be, no. And I agree with you. They're both red cards. If you didn't have VAR, I would say they're both yellows. But obviously, with this VAR, you have to look at everything. I'm not disagreeing with the fact that, you know, VAR is making football better in the sense that when the referees give a decision, they have more evidence with it. My issue is that, you know, it's not just looking at the actual evidence. There seems to be a lot of politics behind it. I'm not going to repeat the words of Piqué and Bartomeu saying that, and even Iker Muniain, funnily enough, talking from Bilbao, saying that, you know, the vast majority of VAR decisions seem to be pushing towards the capital of Spain. And yeah, that's what happened. I mean, yesterday, I thought Ansu had just jumped on the pitch, should have jumped on the pitch much earlier, to be honest. And he was just really, really eager to make an impact. He went for a tackle. He didn't think it was a tackle. He was just going to get the ball. And then the other guy just put his leg up. And yeah, it was, in my eyes, a yellow card. But when you really analyze it and you look at the replay 20 times, then it clearly is a red card. Having said that, I just read before we came on air that, and I saw a video as well, the referee didn't actually see the video of the Ansu Fati tackle. He just saw a steal picture, and then he decided to send him off without actually watching the video, which is baffling when you've got all that technology. And he's telling the players and the world that, yeah, I'm going to watch the video, and then there's no video, it's just a steal. But fair enough. I mean, we are used to this. It's not acceptable, but it's what it is. And as you said, the second player, the Espanol player, doesn't get sent off unless Fati gets sent off, because as soon as the tackle happened, and I could lip read, this is what happens when you can speak Spanish, Luis Suarez, and I think it was Busquets and Jordi Alba, all said, well, you're going to look at that one too. Are you going to look at that one too? And obviously, he did have a look, and they both went, which, by the way, I think was good for Barca overall.
Yeah, I think it's a weird position that Culés are in, because now we obviously love Sergio Busquets, and in our eyes, at least, the man can do very little wrong. But yet, he complains so, so much. Like, I expect that from the personality that Luis Suarez has always shown, and Messi is the captain, and we know that Piqué is Piqué. But throughout his entire career, I think Busquets has, as far as words spoken to the referee, he might, just like Luis Suarez moved into third on the all-time scoring list, 195 goals for Barcelona, surpassing Lazo Kubala, and just Cesar Rodriguez, 232, and Messi in front of him. But Busquets, if you want the power ranking or the all-time list for words spoken to a referee, I think Sergio Busquets has got to be either one or two in Barcelona colors, because he's always on the ref. But this time around, I think you're right. They were absolutely right to question the referee and say, hey, if you're going to look at one, look at the other. And the other thing I want to mention about the VAR and the whole thing of the belief that's coming from the capital. Now, you mentioned Iker Muniain and Athletic Club. As far as Barcelona saying, well, they're trying to give Real Madrid the league and that's a knock on Barcelona, the truth is that those matches matter for the teams that VAR is going against that are playing Real Madrid. So I think the best thing Barca and Barca fans can actually do is almost lay out of that argument, because you're hearing from Real Valladolid and Athletic Club and the clubs that these decisions for VAR for Real Madrid are going against. They're the ones that are truly suffering, because they're the ones who are actually losing the points. Barcelona would have already won La Liga if they actually had taken care of business in a similar way that Real Madrid is doing. So I actually think it's one of those things where when we talk about VAR controversy, and that's obviously the hot topic, the thing everyone wants to talk about, you take the good, you take the bad, and Barca certainly, I think, are on the receiving end of some negative calls in relation to their capital counterparts. But in the same way, again, I think let those clubs that are actually being done wrong by, truly being done wrong by, in those matches. And for Athletic Club, I mean, if they lose Europa League because a decision went against them to hurt Barcelona, it's an ugly look for everyone. And even Tebas came out and said, well, we haven't been so great. Well, yeah, great.
For sure. And that's why I normally don't like talking about the referees. It's just the situation is so alarming. And there's so many continuations of little tiny things that, you know, we had to mention it. But without a doubt, I think if there are 20 teams in Primera División, Madrid and Barca are the two that are the most favored. I have no shadow of a doubt about that. Not at all. And when you were talking about players that could traditionally complain, well, I think Puyol complained quite a bit. And I know that Messi's complaining quite a bit too, but above everybody, I think Risto Stoichkov is the moany player we've ever had. He even stepped on a referee one, for God's sake.
Yeah, it's true. Things are a little more lawless then, but as the years have gone on, there's been more protection for the referees as well. That is for certain. So we got a question from Tom, and I basically want to give a warning that the rest of the questions here on out, at least those that concern the formation, Luis Suarez and Griezmann, and talking about the tactics of the game, a lot of it's connected, so we are going to be stepping on different questions and kind of going through them pretty fluidly. So we're going to start with a question from Tom, and this is more of a broad question about not an individual player, but how do Barca get around this issue of not being able to break down teams that park the bus? Any manager worth their weight in salt will know this is the most successful way to stop Barcelona. And I think I want to add on to Tom's question that for those saying that it was Valverde or Quique Setién, they can't crack the code, they can't figure it out. Again, go back and watch certain matches during the Pep Guardiola years when teams truly did start to park the bus against Barcelona and refuse to come out of their shells and play with a five at the back. When that started, that was all the way back in the Guardiola days. So you are seeing now 13, 14 years of teams using this tactic in the Liga, and different managers for Barcelona have had different success with it. And I think the personnel of a team is actually the most important factor there.
Yeah, I fully agree with you. I think that the personnel, the squad, the players is what the difference is. I mean, if a team parks the bus and you've got Messi at 23 years old, you've got Iniesta at 25, Xavi at 28, then and you've got, you know, Eto'o, you've got Henry, you've got all of those, Dani Alves coming from the side, then it's going to be a little bit easier to break people down. I think the main factor is that Barca are not quick enough mentally and in terms of physical speed in order to find those spaces. I don't think that the players have forgotten how to play football. And I don't think the managers that we've had have, you know, trusted a system that is impossible. I think they're constantly more Setién, to be honest, than Valverde. And Luis Enrique had the, you know, Neymar, Suarez, Messi up front. So that made all the difference there. So, no, we must agree that the players are just not what they used to be. I mean, the clear example was the game against Espanyol. The Barca just were not brilliant at all. They were tired. It was very visible that they were. They lacked air whenever they had a run. There were times that we had the ball and you could see nobody really moving. And I honestly don't know how much more gas Barca have got left in their tank until the end of the season. As Tom mentioned, the Espanyol did park the bus. They had the three center backs. They had a double pivot in front. And then they had players that, even though they were wide most of the time, because Barca lacked width, which most outlets are calling 4-1-2-1-2, I call it the 4-4-2 rhombus, but, you know, that's semantics anyway. I think that the team lacks width like that. It's much more creativity and verticality in the middle. But against Espanyol, with so many people just jam-packed there in the middle, it was difficult to crack. I think Barca were far too casual in attacking transitions, which obviously is never going to work against an ultra-defensive team like that. But I think that at this moment in time, especially we play, what, 7 or 8 matches every 72 hours, I think it's just the players' overall lack of stamina. I'm not blaming the players for that because, you know, the employees, they play whenever they're told to play. So in my eyes, you need to point the finger at the manager for not using the 5 substitutions we've got fully. I don't quite understand why Ricky Puig didn't play a single minute. Obviously, Ansu Fati was self-inflicted. He played a couple of minutes. But people like, as Tom mentioned, Collado, Araujo, and players like that, they could come in at any single point, and they're just not being trusted. I don't know what Setién is trying to achieve. I don't know if he's not looking at Zinedine Zidane managing Madrid, because if you watch a couple of Madrid's game, every single game there's a new face in there. There's a new canterano, there's a new unusual player that is always there. And, you know, Zidane's management after the lockdown has been much, much better than Setién's. And I think that that's one of the factors why Real Madrid are probably going to win the Liga. I mean, we've got 3 matches left, and the squad depth has just not been used to its full capacity. And the result is we've got a physically exhausted squad.
Yeah, I want to talk about tactics on the other side of this break. There is no shortage of action going on at our exclusive partners, betonline.ag. Sports are slowly making their way back, and BetOnline is leading the way with the best odds and lines for all UFC, NASCAR, boxing, and soccer matches. And if you need even more, they have simulated NFL, NBA, and UFC simulations all day, every day, live on their website. Looking for something else other than sports? BetOnline has hundreds of casino games, poker tournaments, and prop bets to check out. Visit betonline.ag and use promo code BLUEWIRE for a free welcome bonus. That's one word, BLUEWIRE. BetOnline, your online wagering experts. So, Frances, you did say a lot of really good points there that I agree with, particularly when it came to the subs. And it's this thing where, especially on social media, when things are happening per second and everybody's got a hot take in the 10th minute, that even if it doesn't apply in the 80th minute, it still winds up being something that you see from the game and something that continues to recycle and recycle and recycle. And when it came to the substitutes, I think that 15 minutes isn't a lot of time in a game, sure, but that game was screaming out, not even for a young player necessarily, for Puig in that 4-3-1-2, and I guess we'll hit this now for a second, that when they were trying that out, that being Setién and Sarabia, when they were trying out that formation, it was Puig playing behind Messi and Suarez, right? And Griezmann was out. And now that Griezmann has come back in, he occupies one of the two, and Messi has basically replaced where they had Ricky Puig. So I think in that formation, unless you're taking out Suarez and then moving Messi back up and then putting Puig there like it was in the waning moments of Villarreal. So that was what happened, where Messi was actually the one who switched his position and Puig came in to be that attacking midfielder. But unless that happens and Suarez comes out in that situation basically for Puig, I don't think we're going to see much of Puig as Setién continues to employ particularly that starting lineup. And that's unfortunate because, again, there are moments, especially when you're talking about players on Barcelona who can pass through lines. Puig, I think, is on the short list of players who do that really well for Barcelona. And then all that said, as far as the formation that we're speaking about and breaking down an opponent, my issue is that Braithwaite, as much as we talk about the youngsters, Brathwaite is the backup number nine. Isn't that what he is? He's one of the backup wingers, but he should be the backup number nine where he's played for so much of his career. And he's not a spring chicken. That's where he's played. So he also has a little bit more speed than Suarez does. And that was a game when you're playing against five at the back. If you're not going to employ width, and I'll get to this, put a pin in that. I'll get to that in a second. If you're not going to employ width, then you need runs in behind that defense. You need some balls over the top, which Messi is maybe the best in the world at spraying, particularly when he's going to drop deep like he did yesterday, a little bit more than he did against Villarreal. So if he's going to drop so deep and play basically in a midfield four, then you're going to have one of your forwards making those runs in behind. And Suarez did that for the first 15 minutes of the game or so. And then it just seemed that he said, okay, I found the game now and we're going to play in a certain way. And I don't think those are instructions. I think that's just the way that Luis Suarez is playing. And then obviously he gets the goal and we think of things differently. We get, oh, he popped up again. That guy's a goal scorer. He's a poacher. He does everything he does. But as far as the flow of a game, which doesn't decide 3 points, but we're complaining here about just the flow of the game and how they look when they got 3 points and got a win. And if it's the 70th minute and Luis Suarez has not made a run in behind the defense now, basically since the second half started, maybe it's time to look to Brathwaite 15 minutes earlier instead of putting him on where Barca is obviously not going to change the way they've been moving the ball and flowing the ball for the last 90 minutes, right? When it's 5 minutes left to play. So I think it's just too late. Don't even make that sub at all. Okay, just go for the 1-0 like they did and put Araujo and third center back on at the death and then try to hold the best you can against the worst team in the Liga at home, where you haven't lost a league match in, what is it, 37 straight or some ridiculous number they're at? The Camp Nou is a fortress, and you're playing against a team that's, you're relegated from the Liga. So the substitutes for me were absolutely puzzling as well.
For sure, all the lack of substitutions. I think that we suffered way too much in the last 10 minutes. I mean, it felt like we're playing, I don't know, Liverpool or Bayern Munich in a Champions League final, just sort of defending and total loss of control. It's a second division team, you know, newsflash, it's a second division team, or, you know, the worst team in the whole of La Liga. They have consistently been at the bottom throughout the whole season, apart from one match day. And they gained control of the game in the last 10 minutes because basically we gave it away. We should have been controlling the ball much better. We were clumsy in possession at times that we shouldn't have been. And there were some players just pushing forward despite the 1-0 favorable result. And at that moment in time, what you want to do is what Barca do so well. I mean, if there's one thing that Barca do well right now, is keeping possession and doing nothing much going forward. And when they really needed to do that, they couldn't. They were just being dispossessed. And it was pretty hard to understand. I mean, we did win the 3 points, but we were playing with fire for far, far too much time for my liking. If we were playing against more, well, pretty much anybody we face this season is better opposition, I don't know what would have happened. And certainly during the Champions League campaign that, you know, we're still a month away, and luckily we are a month away because maybe the players have got some time to rest and refresh. But I think in the last 10 minutes were slightly embarrassing, to be honest, especially knowing that players actually, and you can see it in their eyes as well, they do want to win. It's just they are not mentally or most importantly, physically ready to do that at this moment in time. And they just can't. They just can't. They lack oxygen. And because they don't have enough oxygen for their physical effort, it doesn't seem to flow to their heads either. It was passing in the last 10 minutes where I just want to say awful.
Yeah, and this is an indictment of Quique Setién. Now, 4 of the last 5 matches, Quique Setién has had, and I'll explain this in a second. I think he's gone into, since the break came back, I think he's begun the match with the proper tactics. I think he's done his homework, and I'll explain about Espanyol in a second. But with the exception of Villarreal, which it was easy. He just put on Fati and Puig when Barca were already up by 2 or 3 goals. So I don't even think I want to give him credit there. And the other 4 that Barca did limp over the finish line to either a draw or the 3 points against an Espanyol, or Athletic Club as well, I think that Quique Setién just struggles there, where I don't know what it is, I don't know why, but I think that's the problem here, that he struggles in game management when his tactics start to be so good. And I wonder, and I think the debate today is too, Valverde, how he was very much a man manager or practical, whatever you want to call him, and then Quique Setién is stuck to his principles and not flexible in any way. That's an odd thing to say because he keeps changing up his formation as well. And where I want to speak then now about the width and Antoine Griezmann, Luis Suarez here. Polkett asks, what do you think about Antoine Griezmann? When he plays, the system tends to become pretty narrow. What do you think about that? And I think yesterday, tactically to start the game, I know the formation we keep saying, and we're getting stuck in rhombus or 4-4-2 or 4-3-2-1-2. And I could just keep throwing numbers out. We could do that all day. But it was Messi yesterday against Espanyol, dropping a bit deeper than he did against Villarreal to deal with the five back line of Espanyol, which we've seen Athletic Club, Atletico Madrid, even for stretches there. Everybody's been throwing that five back except for Villarreal, who was the only team who's been blown out by Barcelona since football returned. So they're all just knowing that if you go with the five back, it'll work out against Barcelona. So to combat that, I think Quique Setién was prepared for this and is tweaking in this new formation how they are contending with that. The way they did that today, yesterday, and I was happy to see this, was that Messi would drop deeper, but he wouldn't drop so deep to the halfway point where he was behind Roberto, Busquets, and Rakitic. He actually just dropped to a point where he would be slightly in front of the midfield three, who could provide cover and giving Messi the option to either pass up to one of the two forwards or to dribble and drive himself and have cover in behind. And I think that's really smart. And we've been saying that Messi eventually will be a midfielder. And I think this is the first vestiges of us seeing that, where Quique Setién is giving him a free-flowing position in the middle of the field and allowing him to make that decision and trusting the best player in the world to do that. And against that five back, they're using Luis Suarez to stand in between two of the three center backs. And then Antoine Griezmann tries to position himself about 5 to 20 yards, depending on which side of the field is on or how close they are to the sideline, the ball is at a sideline. And Antoine Griezmann tries to set himself up near enough to Luis Suarez to try to combine, but he tries to put himself in between the defenders and that midfield, usually a midfield three of the opposition, or midfield four, depending on what they're playing. So by positioning himself in between, Messi has the ability to break that midfield line and get it to Griezmann in between the midfields and the defenders. And then at that point, Griezmann can turn and work with Luis Suarez, who's now, in theory, running off one of the center backs. And I also really like the movement between Suarez and Griezmann, that it wasn't always Suarez was along the back, the center backs, and Griezmann was in between the lines. Sometimes they would switch and it was Suarez, but it was usually the case if you saw Suarez on the back line. And where you do sacrifice, again, in this formation, you're going to give away counters. And we saw that early. And if not for Marc-Andre Ter Stegen, who was fantastic in the game, I did not give him enough credit on the YouTube review last night. I thought he was great, maybe the man of the match for Barcelona to keep it what it was. And if not for him, he cuts out some counters and you rely on him. But by not using as much width and keeping Alba and Semedo at home a little bit more, as much as you want to say that they were poor, I don't think so. I think it's a choice to be made. And I think the ability that Barca still has had, they found a way, even with a team parking the bus, to play through the middle. But unfortunately, if Luis Suarez doesn't give you his best and doesn't have his best day, if Roberto and Rakitic don't deliver at least two or three through balls to one of the wingbacks, then that it does get tight. And it gets ugly. And I think this kind of formation has the ability to look really, really ugly if it doesn't work. But I think it's a formation that, in theory, does get the best out of the players on the field.
For sure. I think that the key for the formation, given the fact that there are more players piled towards the middle, and I'm going to talk about the 1-2 triangle at the front in a second, is the width. I think the Dani Alves that of the past, that's what we needed. And that's what we need right now. We need one in each side, really. I'm happy that Jordi Alba is coming back to form. He spent the vast majority of the season injured or recovering from injury, so he's played consistently since the restart, and I think that every single match he's getting better and better. I mean, he still moans, he still complains, and he still pretty much only passes the ball to Messi half the time. But it looks like Griezmann is into their groove, into their, you know, group up front a little bit more, which is good. And then Semedo on the other side, I think he's consistently getting better as well. I would like him to be wider. I would like him to overlap more. I would like him to get to the byline much more often and then have better judgment when crossing. But I think Semedo is as good as he's going to be this season. I think that Sergio Roberto is a better right back moving forward. I know a lot of people will disagree with this, but I think that he's a much better, he's got a better understanding of the Barca system without a doubt, because he's been here, you know, from age 12, 13, but I think that he understands the job of a right-back better. But if he's needed in midfield, which he certainly is, especially since De Jong is not with us, then Semedo is the best alternative we've got, and I think he does a decent job. I don't think he's too bad at all.
Yeah, can we just talk about the Sergio Roberto thing real quick? Because I wrote an article this past week for Barca Blog about how it's not that Sergio Roberto is better as a right-back or a midfielder. I think it's just that Barcelona, especially looking forward to next season, needs to make that decision. I think if you go into a season and you say Sergio Roberto is a midfielder, not in preseason, but in planning ahead for what your transfer stuff is. Because the argument is, and you heard rumors that Emerson might be bought by Barca just to be sold for a triple the amount this summer. And there are rumors that that might happen. So that means that, okay, so if Sergio Roberto really is going to be in the midfield next season, then Barca need to bring in another right back. But that's what I'd like to see. I'd like to see Barca transfer-wise to spend 20 or 25 on another just right back. So you have Semedo, and maybe, again, I'd like a player like Sergino Dest, and Emerson would be fine. And then you say, okay, this is our right back of the future. Semedo is good enough to be our starting right back at the moment because Sergio Roberto gives us, as that left interior, something special. And we know that that position will, in the next few seasons, eventually be given to the Carlos Alenas or Ricky Puig, whoever it may be. And I like the idea of just saying, okay, if he's a center midfielder, we're going to bring in a right back. But we even saw at halftime of that game, Nelson Semedo didn't come out of the game because he was the worst player for Barcelona. He came out of the game because Quique Setién could make a formation shift and put Ansu Fati on without taking off the front three and move Sergio Roberto back to right back and not lose too much. That's what we're talking about here. And I think...
Well, that's precisely what I'm saying. I think that Sergio Roberto, and I did read your article, and it was really good, but my only point is that whether Valverde started the season with Roberto as a midfielder, it doesn't quite matter, because the moment that Wawe wasn't as good as he needed to be, and Semedo is clearly behind Roberto as a manager, and you know, I've been a manager myself as well, not obviously a professional level, but I would put my best players out. So if I've got six midfielders, like we did have at the time, that I trust, and I've got just one right back, and I know I've got a better right back in the squad in Sergio Roberto, then I'm going to start him. So I don't really blame him for doing that. And I think that and this is going to sound silly, but Sergio Roberto's worst enemy is himself, is the fact that he's so polyvalent. He can play in pretty much every position. I mean, you did say it in your article. He's played, apart from goalkeeping, and I think he was central striker, he's played in every other position in the whole of the Barca system. And to be honest, that's a great Swiss knife to have. And I think that if you want to just place him in midfield, that is great in theory, but I don't think effectively it would be a great solution. Now, I just want to say a couple of things about Griezmann. I know you went over it. I thought he was good. He was much more confident. He was mentally stronger. I think that the goal that he scored in Villarreal really did help him. The 1-2 triangle, I don't think worked as well against Espanyol as it did in the previous game, but I thought it was still good. Griezmann is getting much more participation in this new formation. I think he's more free to move around, and he's more confident to run into those pockets. I think if you put him far to the left or the right, normally it would have been the left wing, he's not going to participate as much. And that's why we're seeing Griezmann improving. I liked how he dropped back to participate when needed, as you mentioned that Messi did. I think Griezmann did that as well. And not just when tracking back, but actually to build from behind. And that made him much more involved. And his increased participation really did help the team as a whole. And I think that we cannot go away without mentioning that Barca's goal was created by Griezmann as well. So overall, I'm very happy with him. Obviously, the team didn't have a single shot on goal in the first half, which was very disappointing, and only three in the whole game. But I think overall, we just need to take the game against Espanyol as 3 points that we needed. The team wasn't at its best. Espanyol got relegated, and on to the next one.
Yeah, agreed. It's weird. I see so much arguing and contention, but maybe it's because we've been doing this together for so many years that I think we tend to wind up agreeing. So I think the point, just to summarize all that, the point is that we both think that Griezmann and the movement and the changes that Quique Setién has done to start a match have been good, but we both think that I think it stinks. he's been pretty stinky as far as finishing a match and getting a result, and that's been pretty ugly. But one of the other reasons Barca has been playing ugly is because, question from Mel here, why do you think we're not getting the usual goals from Messi? And I think we've been speaking about tactically where his positioning and the jobs and the roles that he's currently occupying at the moment. But other than he had the penalty goal against Villarreal, sure, but his free kicks haven't really been great since we got back from the break. And he usually has one or two of those to pad his goals as well. But yeah, he's not really getting even many opportunities in the flow of a game. And he's still getting the same amount of attention. So I was trying to look at it from a tactical approach. But I think the other argument to be made is that, can I say, I guess I should whisper it, right? Messi might be tired.
Yep, 100%. I think Messi is tired. I think that he's not as fit as he needs to be. And I think that he's been carrying the whole team for far too many years. And obviously, in recent times, far too many games. I mean, it's 8 in, 3 weeks? It's just insane. And I think the guy is human. I'm not convinced, and I've been saying this for many, many years in the podcast and also writing in Barca Blog, I don't think Messi should be allowed to play every second of every game. I think there needs to be a coach running the team that actually says, hey, I understand you want to play. I understand goal scoring records, etc. I understand that you want to take the team forward and you're the team leader, etc. But you need to rest. And if you don't agree with it, I'm going to make you. I think we need a manager that can do that. I think Messi himself should be understanding that as well. Obviously, in the current situation, I know they want to challenge for La Liga, but I think that, you know, the last 20 minutes, what Messi was doing, Riqui Puig could do as well, especially if you put him right behind the two strikers. And,
yeah, exactly.
And I think that is the reason. In terms of the free kicks, etc., not the penalties, because penalties he's scoring, but free kicks, well, you need to be really fit and you need to be very confident to score a free kick like that, and obviously to do that regularly. And I don't think that he's mentally and definitely physically ready to do that. And I think that's what's happening. I mean, and you know, strikers and goal scorers go up and down. Fortunately for all of us, Messi has been scoring pretty much every day for the last 15 years. But the guy is human. He is now 33 and he's playing every game. So I think that's what it is.
Yeah, I don't even think it's a critique of the way he's playing. As I said, tactically, he's almost adjusting to a new position right behind Griezmann and Suarez. And it does take a little bit of time to get used to. But as I said, the positive from all this is that Quique Setién has found a way to give Messi the decision against and Espanyol also, not too great. There's a reason they're the worst team in the league. There's a reason they also hemorrhage goals throughout most of this season, that they were a little indecisive on when to step to him. So another team, and if they played Atletico Madrid again with this same formation, I assume that midfield three would be up on Messi a little bit better than the Espanyol midfielders, and then the wingbacks would pinch in a little bit better. But to give Messi the option to dribble or to shoot shooting if he's close enough, or to try to play make and orchestrate, try to look for a switch or look for a through ball, he has the ability to really do everything. Obviously, he's the best playmaker in the world. But as far as the usual goals, I think maybe this also could take some getting used to, that Messi just, he's so deep. And it's not that he's dropping too deep to create or to help Barca create goal-scoring opportunities, but that he's dropping so deep that he himself is negating his ability to get goal-scoring opportunities or easy goals at all. It's just he has to do so much work from the playmaking role. And I think the question is answered because you hit it right on the head that he can start every match. I mean, it's fine. We know that he likes to be fit and he likes to play into his fitness, and he is inhuman even in the way that he physically trains and has the best science to keep him as healthy as possible. He's also had the longest break that he's had in quite some time. But as you said, the last 15 minutes of a game against a team that was about to be relegated, draw or win, they were about to be relegated, Riqui Puig could have done, at least he could have done the 15-minute impression of Messi. No one is Messi, but he could have done a 15-minute pretty solid impression there. So, yeah, what do you think about that, Frances?
Well, I just want to say something. If any player in the world had 20 goals and 20 assists like Lionel Messi has, they would be, you know, they would make statues of him around the stadium. If it was Borussia Dortmund, if it was Bayern Munich, if it was Liverpool, any team would kill to have someone with 20-20 at this stage of the season. And you know, we are criticizing Messi for not being the extraterrestrial Messi that he normally is. We're looking at reasons and we're analyzing, extra analyzing, but this guy is extraordinary. He's 33 years old and he's head and shoulders much more effective than any other player in the whole of the world. So I just wanted to mention that.
Yeah. Well, let's end this show with, we're going to be talking about the Champions League. We're going to be previewing it against the second leg against Napoli. We're going to go over that in a little bit, but we're going to hit it briefly here as we skim the top. So Dirk asks, how important, if not critical, are De Jong, Puig, Dembele, and Fati for a Champions League run next month? And Texas asks, how do you generally feel about Barcelona's attack heading into the next round of the Champions League? And what do you think the most effective offensive formation against Napoli would be? And I think I would answer both these in the same way. I think you could probably take the name Dembele out, but as far as the Champions League, I think the way that Barcelona are going to set up against Napoli or against anybody, I think even though La Liga is still possible and all the veterans are playing, I think what is currently going on at the club is Quique Setién is trying to find a formation that he wants to use in Champions League. And we know who the starters are going to be. It's basically who started yesterday. And I would just replace Rakitic with De Jong if he's able to get back healthy and fit. Because even if he's able to get fit against Real Valladolid, that means he still only has 3 games to get accustomed to this new formation, which, as we saw, it took him a little bit of time to get accustomed to playing at Barcelona at the start of the season. So he's got basically 3 matches to get ready into this formation and be the best player and beat out Vidal and Rakitic for that starting spot if Sergio Roberto stays as the left interior, which I think in this formation, I do believe that a midfield three of Busquets, Roberto, and De Jong with Semedo at right back probably had a little bit of a higher ceiling than replacing Semedo with Roberto and then moving Rakitic or Vidal into that other midfield spot. So that would be my view there. That would be who I would pick to start in the Champions League with the formation that he's currently going with, which I think he's trying to fine-tune. And then Puig and Fati, they are young, they are sprite, they could be game changers, I think, in any round if they are trusted, though unfortunately, I think that's the thing. Are they critical the way De Jong is? Absolutely not, because I don't know if Quique Setién is going to trust them, and I will say that I don't think we need to talk about Dembélé. I don't think he's going to be healthy at all.
Well, my midfield three is a little bit different from yours. I think that if I had to challenge a title in one match, like really we need to go against Napoli and hopefully in the next rounds as well, I play Rakitic as a defensive midfielder. I bench Busquets. I think Rakitic is more vertical than Busquets. I think that in terms of defensive capabilities, I think they are on par at this moment in both their careers. And up front, I would say Sergio Roberto and De Jong. That would be my three in the middle. And I totally agree about what you said about the formation. I think that Setién is trying to work out what this 4-1-2-1-2 can be and how effective it is against especially teams that park the bus or are, you know, defensively robust, definitely much more than Villarreal was. But I think that once he's mastered that, I think what Barca will be able to do, which I think is what he was trying to do yesterday when Ansu Fati was sent off, or 2 minutes before that, really, he can switch the formation as the game develops. So you can start with the formation that we've seen lately and then go for a 4-3-3. Or I think what he was trying to do yesterday was a 4-2-4 because he left Suarez and Griezmann up front at the same time. Obviously, we're never going to know what he was going to do.
No, I think you're right, though, because I think you're right, because even when the red card came, he moved to that double pivot with Rakitic and Busquets. So I think you're absolutely right that was actually the intention.
Yeah, so that's what I'm thinking. So if we can have those three variations, even the 4-2-4 being a variation as well, that we could include, that would give us a lot of opportunities moving forward. But as I said in the previous podcast, regardless of what we do up front, I mean, we need to try and find a solution. We need to try and be effective and incisive and creative, etc. But I think in order to win the Champions League, we need to be much more solid at the back. I think Lenglet has been to a great standard pretty much since the lockdown finished, and I'm very happy about that. But I think that his partner, so Gerard Piqué, they're not always aligning, and I think especially tracking back, Piqué, unfortunately, I'm sorry to say, it's quite slow moving back, or much lower than he has been in the past. So I think that what he doesn't have in terms of speed anymore because of age, and because of fatigue and accumulation of games, I think he needs to make up in terms of positioning. And obviously, when you've got Semedo and Alba pushing forward, which obviously I mentioned already today, it is really important that those two are not holding hands, but you know what I mean? Like if they push forward, they push forward together. And when they track back, they cover each other's spaces, especially if anyone in the counter, like we saw against Espanyol, for example, with De Tomás. But, you know, if you're playing someone like Mbappé or whatever, they're going to be incredibly fast and they could really hurt us. So to win the Champions League, I am intrigued as to how we're going to break teams up front, but I'm much more wary as to how solid our backline would be, especially if our backline is only two players with one of the right backs that hasn't pushed forward, if that makes sense.
Yeah, I err just a little bit differently. I think I'm the same amount of concerned with the stagnant offense at times that I am with the defense. I think Gerard Piqué in the Champions League, I do think he has 4 masterclass games in him left this season, but I hope he doesn't use any of them in the next 3 games. Let's put it that way. I think that he has an ability or to have a run in form of 4 or 5 games, but unfortunately he is not there in the last 3 games. He started coming back from the break well, and then the last 3 games he has not looked his best. And you're right, if he is not at his best, then that defense is pretty much going to fall apart in front of Ter Stegen, and then we're going to have to hope that the German goalkeeper can save Barcelona's bacon like he did in La Liga so many times last year to get Valverde that La Liga title to keep him in charge of Barcelona. So let's finish this, Frances, with one final question. It's a quick one and one that we will talk about again because transfers are always in the back of our minds and we don't even know when the transfer market's going to start or how that's going to work out. But Michael asks, if you could only sign a player at one position of need, which do you go for this offseason? Center back, striker, defensive midfielder, left wing, left back, right back. So the question is not which player do you want, but what position needs to be enforced the most?
Well, we need a forward that can score goals and that can make our attack more variable, more creative, more dynamic, more incisive. I know that regular listeners know that Neymar would be my number one choice, and I'm still not going to change my mind. I think that we need a winger that can give us, when we go for that 4-3-3, an actual option on the left. But then again, if Dembélé can come back to form and he can actually, you know, maintain his fitness whenever he reaches his peak, then we may not need Neymar. But I'm not confident Dembélé would do that. And I think that Barca with a 4-3-3 with width and speed are the most dangerous.
Yeah, I mean, I continue to say that I think Neymar coming, especially at his age and the health that he always has, I think not even Dembélé, I think it would destroy the career of Ansu Fati. And then Trincao is also coming in. So I actually do think that the depth that Barcelona do have on their wings is good enough for unbalancing a team even eventually. And I think those players are only going to get better. But as you mentioned, the point here is the center forward spot. Luis Suarez knows it. Everybody knows it. And then number two behind that, obviously, we were just talking about how old our right center back in Gerard Piqué has gotten. And I think Araujo is a really good third center back. Maybe not really good, but he is a third or fourth center back. He's good enough to get backup at Barcelona, but he is certainly not ready to walk into a starting lineup and replace Gerard Piqué next year. I think you do need a player with a little bit of a higher ceiling, as good as I think Araujo can be. But yeah, the striker, that's why Lautaro Martinez is the one that when we're yelling about, you know, there are even reports and rumors that are not true this week that Lautaro Martinez has already been locked up for 111 million euros that Barca will pay in October, because obviously they're going to take out a bunch more loans as well and ask for pennies in that way. So as much as those rumors are still going to be floating out there, the reason why throughout the entire Kool-Aid community, you don't see too much opposition, or people will say that's too expensive, but people also, I think every Kool-Aid understands that that forward spot, that center striker spot, that Luis Suarez, as much as we get on him, as much as his speed frustrate us, as much as the last two seasons or so, it's been difficult to watch him slow down, he still bangs in 15 goals a season, and he is still the third all-time leading goal scorer for Barcelona. So it cannot negate just how good he is. Even as his body breaks down and declines on him, he is an absolute legend. His personality is one that I will always dislike and be frustrated with, but he has fit perfectly into the Barcelona that has won La Ligas in the last few seasons and has won Copa del Rey and has been one of the best teams in the world. And Luis Suarez has been such a part of that, and it's a tall task to try to replace him. But yeah, if I could sign one player at one position, it's going to be a striker, not a winger, not just a generic forward, but or like an Antoine Griezmann, not a secondary striker. Again, please stop with that. No attacking midfielders like Coutinho, just a striker, a goal scorer, a guy that's going to be in the box and create havoc, and also can score a golazo or two. That's what Barcelona needs. So you want the final word here, Frances?
No. I think that we are both consistent with our opinions week on week, so it's good to see that.
Well, yeah, we do try to switch it up, and as Kiki Setién switches up formation, thankfully it gives us different things to talk about as we near the end of the season. As we said, Champions League is going to start to come into the forefront of our mind as La Liga continues to, I think we only have one or two more shows before La Liga is over, and unfortunately we don't have to talk about who'll win La Liga, and then it's time for the Champions League, and then it'll be transfers before you know it, and then it's next season, and who knows, coaching, elections, yada, 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 yada. So I think there's still a lot to talk about, even twice a week as we've been doing it recently since the quarantine. So I want to thank you, the listeners, so much for listening. If this is one show a week for you or two shows a week, thanks so much for listening. You can tap in your app and check out the show notes to subscribe. You can find us on social media too. We're on Twitter at the Barcelona Pod, or HiltonD13 for me, and on Instagram at the Barcelona Pod. Our closed Facebook group where we got these questions in La Ronda from is tbpod.link/group. Deeper dives and discussions. You can also help us out on Patreon to continue making these shows and get those quick take match reviews at tbpod.link/Patreon. We're also on YouTube at the Barcelona Podcast. I've got some tactical breakdowns over there where if you actually want to see pictures that relate to some of the words that I'm rambling about here, go over to the YouTube channel, give us a like, and hit that subscription button. That's a big help over there as well. So thanks so much for listening to the Barcelona Podcast. Until next time, we'll talk to you soon, and Forza Barça.
Forza.
This is Brandon Kelly, the host of Blue Wire's new podcast, Golden Goal.
Messi takes everybody on. Messi has got it!
From Lionel Messi to Marta to Pele, our show takes a deep dive into soccer superstars.
2-0, and he's... What a World Cup for Megan Rapinoe!
From Zlatan Ibrahimovic's brash confidence with the play to back it up, to Megan Rapinoe's heroic outspokenness and World Cup flair. Each episode examines a personality of the world's game. We'll dig into Maradona's Hand of God performance and subsequent downfall, the teenage trio at Dortmund that signaled the next generation of superstars, and that infamous headbutt that slung Zinedine Zidane from glory. Golden Goal, soccer stars and the moments that made them. Premiering this summer on Blue Wire.